Cable News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Statehood. The two major sticking points were slavery and prohibition. If you think about the early settlers of Oregon, they fell into two primary groups, very puritanical New Englanders, often missionaries, on one side, but then you also had hard-drinking, hard-living Southern trappers and farmers and that sort of thing who came from Missouri and Arkansas and Kentucky and places like that. And so they all arrived here in Oregon, tried to form a government, very different ideas about slavery and race. And the slavery issue was settled by the federal government because of the Missouri Compromise and a number of other things. Oregon could not enter the state as a slave state, so the Southerners officially excluded free black people. At the end of the Civil War, for example, Oregon was not a slave state, but it was the only state that still had written into its constitution that you could not legally live here if you were black. And the last of that, those black exclusion laws, by the way, didn't go off the books until the 1920s. But the other issue the federal government left alone, and that was prohibition. And prohibition carried the day when the territory was formed. The whole territory was officially dry. And that suited a lot of people fine, because they could make their own moonshine if they wanted it. Otherwise, they didn't have to see it. But that started to change when the big cities realized that back in the 1800s, people, Oregonians, hated taxes even more than they do today. And the cities needed some way to raise tax revenue. And what's the one thing that even today people are willing to pay taxes for? Alcohol. So there was an intense pressure to end prohibition. It was ended. Cities like Portland, for a time, that was the major source of revenue, was taxing alcohol. And so suddenly alcohol was welcome in most of Oregon. But Forest Grove, which was founded by missionaries who also created Pacific University, was just stubbornly dry. And that's why we're really focused on Forest Grove as an example of how this played out. As I said, the federal government didn't get involved in prohibition, but that's not entirely true, because even when alcohol was prohibited in saloons and stores and that sort of thing, doctors and pharmacists were able to prescribe it under federal law. And if you look back to the 1800s, if you walked into a drugstore, most of the drugs you found on the counter had as their active ingredient either alcohol or one opiate or another, or sometimes a combination of the two. And so druggists and doctors were allowed to prescribe alcohol. And it turns out that it wasn't difficult to get a prescription for alcohol from your doctor, because that became a major source of revenue for many of the druggists and doctors. It turns out that they didn't sell little prescription bottles of alcohol, but in the case of some of the pharmacies, there were back rooms with bars. The deeds to the homes in the city said you could not possess alcohol, you couldn't sell alcohol, but the one place that the city couldn't specifically ban alcohol was the pharmacies. That didn't stop the president of Pacific University and some of the people who still ran the powerful church. They wanted to run those pharmacies out of town. And there were other forces that wanted to do the same. A mini war erupted in some ways in Forest Grove back in the late 1800s, going well into the 1900s. You've got pharmacies, you've got saloons, you've got churches burning, you've got people being voted in and out of office every year or two. This just constant battle over alcohol. But there was no way to really truly enforce the ban because Forest Grove didn't have a police department at the time. And that's where the president of Pacific University and a few others came in and actually created their own private police department.
Could you explain a little bit more by what you mean when you say private police department?
Well, the city said, we have laws on the books, and we're willing to prosecute those laws. But because we don't have alcohol taxes, we don't have any money to hire police departments. The president of the university and some others said, well, what if we put up the money, we hire the agents to come in, we will investigate these pharmacies doing what we are sure is illegal activity. We'll do all the legwork, we'll hand over the evidence, and they'll be prosecuted under the auspices of the city of Forest Grove. City of Forest Grove said, oh, fine, it's a deal. So the Law and Order League is what they called this private police department, hired undercover agents to go into the local pharmacies to collect evidence of illegal drinking. And it wasn't hard to come up with this evidence. It was everywhere. We found a few years ago, struck gold in the archives of Pacific University, we found the original correspondence between the president of Pacific University at the time and the detective agency that he had hired to do this. The agents just walked right in basically to the back of the pharmacies that stayed open till 1-2 o'clock in the morning. These agents would walk in, they'd order beer, they'd be given beer for, they were full of people. They were full of people for a couple of reasons. One is that Forest Grove's efforts to remain dry in a way blew up in their face, because in the surrounding towns where alcohol was legal and saloons were legal, those towns collected taxes. And often those taxes amounted to more than half the cost of a pint of beer, for example. Well, the pharmacies in Forest Grove didn't have to pay those taxes. So not only were the people of Forest Grove able to buy alcohol freely, it actually became a magnet for surrounding towns for people to come in and get drunk at night. You could see where the people of Forest Grove thought this was a problem. But a bigger problem was that as the agents started taking names of the people who were most actively involved in the alcohol trade, they discovered a problem. The person who ran the alcohol trade at one of the pharmacies happened to be the brother of the current mayor of Forest Grove. Another of the frequent patrons at this particular pharmacy happened to be the brother of the judge who was going to hear the case when it was brought to trial. And possibly worst of all is another of the frequent visitors to the saloon, if you will, at the back of the pharmacy, was the county judge who would have heard any of appeals of the case had they been convicted. This posed a real issue for the Law and Order League, because they knew there's no chance that they were going to be able to prosecute the brothers and judges and that sort of thing of all the most prominent people in town. They did pursue it, though. They did their best. They ended up doing a sting operation where they sent in two underage boys to attempt to buy alcohol, and then left all of the prominent people out and prosecuted the case based on this. Long story short, the case fell apart, became a huge scandal because they presented gigantic bills for prosecution and ended up coming away with nothing. That ended any private police efforts to enforce these laws.
Have you seen anything similar in modern day Oregon that has had contractual efforts for justice or for law enforcement?
Well, you know, I don't think Oregon is the prime example, but certainly you can see some of these same sorts of concerns, I think, with some of the private prison companies, and where the financial incentive for for-profit companies is to house as many inmates for as long as possible. And clearly, you know, that I think bears some similarities to some of the moral and ethical dilemmas over the inherent conflict of interest of private companies or organizations being responsible for enforcing laws, or at least, you know, running prisons and that sort of thing. You know, without taking sides so much, anytime there's prohibition, there's going to be crime. And if you look at Forest Grove back in the day, just as prohibition actually attracted drinkers, it also attracted other kinds of trouble. Because if alcohol is illegal, the only people who are willing to sell it are, I won't say criminal elements, but it invites some criminal control over it. And there were a number of criminal cases. For example, there was a very high-profile kidnapping of two police officers in Forest Grove by bootleggers that they had tried to arrest. And they were kidnapped at gunpoint and driven to Portland, that sort of thing. So the effects of prohibition on Forest Grove haven't been what the founding fathers, I think, anticipated they would be. And in 1914, alcohol again was prohibited in Oregon. Well, alcohol was everywhere in Washington County and elsewhere, and there was very lax enforcement of the laws until the federal agents were allowed, given authority, to come in and enforce the prohibition laws after national prohibition. And part of the reason that the enforcement of prohibition was so lax in and around Forest Grove was that it turns out that one of the biggest bootleggers in the county happened to be the sitting sheriff of Washington County, Jesse Applegate, always had alcohol, first in the pharmacies. Then exceptions were made for pool halls. And then when Forest Grove started annexing other parts of the area that already had saloons, they made exceptions for those. And then a couple of stores that sold alcohol were annexed. They made exceptions for those, but still tried to keep up the pretense of being a dry town. And it really came to a head in 1970 when somebody wanted to open up a high-end restaurant and serve liquor by the glass. And the city had said, no, we're going to draw the line there. Well, the guy who wanted to do it, a guy by the name of Aldi Howard, ran for city council and with a couple of friends were able to not only open their restaurant, but really once and for all destroy the notion that Forest Grove was a dry city.
Do you feel there's some mirroring problems maybe for Forest Grove or surrounding areas with the new implementation of the recreational marijuana legalization?
Well, you know, there's at least one marijuana outlet in Forest Grove. The small town just south of Forest Grove, Gaston, has gone through a very heated debate over an indoor grow operation in a very small town. Actually in a barn that now it's been a commercial building for some time. You know, the parallel, I guess, to the whole issue with legal marijuana is that it's the same issue in many ways with cities. Even cities that would prefer to keep it out are looking at it as, you know, a potentially major revenue base for taxes. If you look at the irony, Forest Grove today, if you go to downtown Forest Grove, you'll see signs that claim that Forest Grove is the birthplace of Oregon Pinot Noir. And alcohol has, over the years, become one of the primary industries of Forest Grove, more so than most other towns, even in wine country. In Forest Grove now, we have countless wineries. We have wine tasting rooms in downtown. We have a sockery. We have a distillery. We have hops growers in the areas who are growing for all the craft beer makers in the area. And so you look at this town that fought for years and years to stay dry. All of a sudden, it's gone from being the devil's juice to a major source of revenue for the entire city.
And does I understand you have an event as well?
We are going to be talking about wine and whiskey in the Wild West for a presentation for the Washington County Museum. It'll be June 2nd at 7 o'clock. It'll be $6 for Washington County Museum members. It'll be $8 advance tickets sales or $10 at the door. The irony, I guess, that the event, while it's for the Washington County Museum, is actually going to be held at the Plum Hill Vineyards. And if you haven't been out to the Plum Hill Vineyard, it's just south of Forest Grove. It has incredible panoramic views, also some excellent wine, and that wine will be available at the event. Come on out while I'm talking about prohibition. You can sip on some wine.
This is Natasha Delapine with KBOO News.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:59. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
Cebu Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 16th Annual Village Building Convergence, June 3rd to June 12th, to take place in locations all over Portland. The Village Building Convergence is an annual celebration of placemaking, community, natural building, music, and art. During the daytime, there will be 35 natural building and public arts projects to take part in. During the evening, there will be food, speakers, musical performances, and more. Again, that's the 16th Annual Village Building Convergence, June 3rd to June 12th in Portland. Information on project locations, performances, speakers, and more can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to a digital indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City Native Radio.
Can you go to Minden first then?